Hi, Isaac.
Hey Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for getting on a call.
Yeah, you bet. All right, so let's just roll right into things.
Sure.
Let's start with your year of graduation, including if you finished coursework, spring, summer, or fall, and your major or majors.
I graduated in 2023 and I was a musical theater major at Boston Conservatory.
Got it. Spring 23.
Spring, yep.
All right, excellent. And yeah, I usually ask people their principal instrument, but musical theater major, that is its thing.
Yeah,
Yeah,
voice.
I guess technically voice, but yeah, they don't call it that. So great. We will get to your history later. But for now, please tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
So my current job, I am the assistant director of annual giving at MIT Sloan School of Management. And I am the part of the annual fund team, and I work with alumni to secure funds for the annual fund every year. So I have a portfolio of about 1,000 people, and I reach out to them and engage with them and figure out how we can get them more involved with the school. And then I also solicit them for funds for the annual fund. So I'm a fundraiser.
Okay, great. I'm going to go into the ask you a couple other questions here. And let me tell you that I know a shockingly large amount about college fundraising because I don't usually share this, but I am Berkeley's top living faculty donor.
Oh,
I haven't quite hit a million yet, but I'm not all that far.
good for you. That's great that you're giving back. It means that you really like the place you're at.
Yeah. And I'll say Berkeley lets us set up most of it's been in like endowed funds to support stuff. Like I run an Earth Day event. So then I'm like, rather than me have to beg the powers that be for money every year to do it, I'm just going to put an endowment under it and there's my money. But okay. So when I heard you say you have a portfolio of 1,000, this doesn't sound like the type of people who get a little letter in the mail once or twice a year, and then some of them send $50. This sounds like there's some higher level donors who you're in touch with.
So I work with a variety of donors. I work with some who have never given before, and then a lot who have given, between $100 and $2,500 a year, and sometimes up to $10,000 a year. And my goal is to really, so we actually are losing 10% of our donor base every year. And so my job is to build this kind of base of the pyramid and start that conversation about philanthropy with alumni and get them engaged with the school in a way that is meaningful for them, that makes them want to give back. So it's really all about relationship building with people who have been identified as potential prospects and potential supporters of the school.
Got it. That 10% figure is interesting. I assume that that's not a particular to MIT thing, but more general.
It is. It's pretty general. Well, in higher education, yeah.
Sure. Is that just kind of a combination of people who pass away, hit the fiscal wall, or move and you can't find them anymore?
It's a good question. I think it's a lot about education as well. Especially, it's a generational thing. Philanthropy is in our younger alumni isn't as common. It's not as known. I think a lot of people in the younger. Our younger alumni, which we would consider anyone who's graduated in the last 5 years, think about giving back in a way that, like, oh, I can just give to a GoFundMe page. That's really immediate gratification. And the impact is immediate. Whereas when you give back to your higher education institution, it can not feel as immediate. And so I think it's all about building a real understanding and trust in the donors at the lower level of the pyramid to then get them to understand why they may want to move up the ladder.
Sure, an annual fund, that just sounds like general revenue type helps the MIT budget type thing.
Unrestricted. Yep. Unrestricted and
Unrestricted.
use funds. That's for the we consider it the leadership's fund. So it's how leadership can, it's operating budget, it's student experience, it's clubs, it's pays for career development support. Really spans all across the school.
Sure, got it. Yeah, it definitely allows for more thing, more money to be thrown at something very promising quickly.
Yeah, we say it always, the annual fund really focuses on the right now, whereas the endowment allows you to think about the future of the school. And the right now it's really volatile and things are changing pretty quickly. So it's an exciting place to be.
Yeah, I'm sure. So you said your assistant director was Portfolio 1000 at Sloan School, right, which is a business school at MIT.
Yes.
Can I ask how many other people are in a position like yours?
So it's just me and one other assistant director dealing with the portfolio and the size of 1,000. The average portfolio size for a higher ed fundraiser is 145. So we have
You
a high
got seven
level.
times that.
I sure do. And we have technology that helps us prioritize our outreach and keep us in track. But yeah, it's we have big portfolios.
And can I ask you, in terms of communication, when you have 1,000 people, like, how are you in contact with these potential donors, right? Is it just, emails? Is it Zoom calls? Is it meeting people in person in groups, 101? Like, what's the.
So the position I'm in is what we call a donor experience officer, and it's something that really came out of the pandemic when everything went online. They were like, well, how do we like fundraisers used to just travel all over the place, but now like we need to raise funds and we can't travel. So what do we do? And so this idea of a donor experience officer came up, which is a large portfolio, but a piece of technology that will tell you. So there's data that shows that you need to reach out to a prospective donor 7 to 10 times before they answer you. And so in usually against three different platforms, so phone call, LinkedIn, email, whatever it may be. And we have a platform that allows us to prioritize our outreach and tell us, like, so each day I log on and it'll say, you need to send 5 intro emails, 5 follow-up emails, 5 phone calls, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so you're, and I know, I've no doubt that when you speak with someone, you log the conversation or, the interaction. So when you click on somebody's name, you get to see the history of the.
Yes. And all the people who have talked to that alumni prior to me, I get to see that as well. In one 30-minute phone conversation, I have to get the alumni to understand that I'm here as a trusted advisor, really figure out what they're excited about and why they want to give back to the school, ask them for their support, and then also ask them about their estate plans. So it's a lot to put into a 30-minute conversation, but I
Sure.
find it really fun and interesting and exciting, and I get to meet some really cool people doing, like, actually changing the world.
Cool. Circle back to that. So, okay. I never ask people how much money they make other than that cutoff, right, to qualify you.
Sure.
But I'm curious about the structure of your pay. In other words, is it a salaried position or is there some sort of commission slash bonus structure
Because it's
involved?
the nonprofit sector, there's no commission bonus structure. It is a salary position.
Gotcha. Be honest if you can, about how many hours a week do you work?
I would say probably 50.
Okay. Got it. So you're putting in some good time there.
Yeah.
And let's
It
is
week by week, so some weeks are lighter than others, but on a busy week, I'd say 50.
understood. And is this like in office, hybrid, at home?
So we are required to be in the office one day a week, and the rest is work from home, but I tend to go in 2 to 3 days a week.
Gotcha. And it sounds like, again, the donor interactions is primarily over the phone. Is that accurate?
Yes, we are almost always on Zoom unless a donor wants to be on campus.
Gotcha. Cool. Can you take us through like a typical work day and like what you're doing hour by hour?
Yeah, so I would log on in the morning into my system, which is called Sales Loft, where I do it's that system that prioritizes my outreach, and I will go through all of my 5 intro emails. I have to introduce myself to 5 people a day and put the We say put them into cadence. So I'm putting them into the introduction cadence, which is basically I'm trying to get them to meet with me or interact with me in a way that I can better understand what their goals are through their philanthropy or engagement, also opportunities to volunteer. So I would sit down and I do all those emails, and then I typically have like two donor calls a day. So I'll have two of those 30-minute Zoom calls that I told you about. And then those Zoom calls require some pretty detailed notes. We call them contact reports, which I'll then write up and submit to the system to then go on their record.
Gotcha. You know, it just occurred to me that you had that minimum amount which the people give, and then there's also a maximum, which means if you ever get the big check, I'm guessing that's the last time you talk to them.
Actually, so we kind of think about it in the sense, so what we have is what's called the Dean's Circle. So it's a leadership level giving circle of donors who give $2,500 or more. So that's really the goal, is to get as many Dean's Circle donors in the door as possible. So then we can really start to cultivate them as potential major gift donors, because when you're a Dean's Circle donor, you get to interact with the school leadership, other alumni who are in the same area as you. And really start to engage in a more holistic way with the school. And so as soon as they give that gift, we welcome them and steward them as Dean Circle donors. So they get access to impact reports as well as special event invitations. So they really become part of this curated community of donors.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And now you alluded to this earlier, but I sort of want to follow Nebraska officially, which is, you know, one of the criteria to hit to qualify for these interviews is that you enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
So what is it about, you know, can I say academic fundraising,
sure,
that you enjoy?
I really love building relationships with people. I always say that philanthropy, when people give back, there's some of the most generous moments of their life. And we get to really be a part of that. I maybe not be able to give a multi-zero-thousand-dollar gift to my alma mater, but I get to help these people do exactly that and really make an impact and a difference. And it's really special to be a part of that, something that feels so good for these alumni. And also, building connections. So it's like seeing the dotted lines of things they may be interested in and finding ways to connect them with other alumni. It's just really rewarding and exciting. And I truly do feel like the work that MIT and MIT Sloan are doing, the research they're doing, is changing the world. And so I get to just be a small part of that.
All right. That's wonderful. So, let's take it back now to 2023, although if you feel the story is a logical earlier starting point, we can go back before that. But, I mean, I'm guessing as you're finishing up music theater that you're not thinking academic fundraising. I could be wrong. If not, let's say put us in your headspace as things are wrapping up at BOCO, and then we'll take it one step at a time, both in terms of what you were doing for work, but also like where you were at in terms of your career, what you wanted it to be.
Yeah. So the first time I was introduced to philanthropy was actually at BOCO. I had the dean of theater called me into his office and said, "We're naming your scholarship after John Foster, who is a donor at the conservatory." And then I got to meet with this donor and get lunch with him and really connect with him. And he, you know, he really cared about me and my success at BOCO. And then I ran into some financial problems with my family and just situation and things that were going on. And he really stepped up and helped me like complete school. And
wow.
I wouldn't have been able to do that without his support. And so I felt the direct impact of philanthropy. And so I knew I loved it because I knew directly the experience of philanthropy and how it could really change someone's life, really, and their circumstance. And so I kind of, you know, I was going to the donor events, I was getting engaged at Berkeley and BOCO. And so I really liked the art scene too. The art philanthropists are typically people who might not be artists themselves, but are really passionate and interested in it, especially in young artists. So I just really like that community aspect. But when I
So,
grew
sorry, how did you connect with the art scene and the art scene philanthropy?
So I guess that actually happened. So I graduated in 2023 in the
Mm-hmm.
spring, and then I moved home to Maine. I couldn't find a job. I was trying really hard. I
Sure.
applied for over 60 jobs, and I
I'm sorry, are
was.
these jobs like musical theater jobs, or are you just applying to everything?
It was all theater adjacent admin jobs. So it was
Got
like
it.
admin assistant. What else did I apply for? I was applying for anything that I thought I could maybe do. There's this website called it's through the Mass Cultural Council. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it has all arts focused job postings in the state of Mass, and it's such a great resource. And so I was finding all kinds of jobs and applying for them.
Can I ask a potentially annoying question or stupid
Sure.
question, which is, you're not the first BOCO musical theater grad who I interviewed, but pretty much all of them, what I hear is I graduated and I moved to New York.
Oh, yeah.
So, can I just ask, why did you not move to New York like everybody else?
Yeah, so to be transparent, I was looking down the line at the student loans that I had, and the job to job structure of being a performing actor. I went to New York, I did the showcase, like I did all of that. To be an actor and move to New York, and I had planned on it, but then I just really needed some more security. I wanted something that I could really build for myself long t and think about it long term.
Got it. So you're already thinking you want more of a, I'll call it a 9 to 5.
Yeah, I wanted a 401k, you know?
Yep. So, okay. So as you said, theater adjacent, but not doing the whole wait tables while you audition for a ton of roles.
Yeah, no, I couldn't. It just didn't see that for me, long term. And I'd been involved. I worked as a work study student, in the theater division office as an admin assistant. I was also, the associate director for the summer program through Berklee Summer Programs for the Musical
Okay.
Theater Acting Intensive. So I had
Wow.
all this administrative work experience, and I knew I was good at it, and I didn't hate it. I kind of loved it. And so I was like, what? I can probably make a career out of this. And so I
Got
ended
it.
up getting a job. So I went home and I substitute taught for 3 months, which was crazy experience. I substitute taught theater at my old high school, and then I got a job at MIT as as an executive assistant to the executive director of arts initiatives.
Could ask quickly, how did you get that job? Was it just a random application hit or?
I thought for sure I was going to get a job based on a connection I'd already made, and this was one of those jobs that just popped up, and I applied for it, and it is the best thing that could have ever happened. It was just the one that worked out.
It
Expensive.
popped up on where you look at like the MIT website or just
I was
scouring it.
on Google or
Okay.
LinkedIn or something. It
All
wasn't the
right.
typical place that I was looking.
Okay. All right. Sorry if I was diving, going, drilling in deep there. I'm always curious as to
Oh,
how do people
that's okay.
get that. So you apply, and it says, you said the MIT Arts Initiative.
Yeah, so the MIT Office of the Arts, her title is the Executive Director of Arts Initiatives. And so she oversaw CAS, which is the Center for Art, Science, and Technology. And basically, it is a funded and endowed group that funds faculty and staff and student grants across campus for art-related projects. So they have to be art-focused projects, but they're usually at the intersection of engineering, math, science. So it was like this really intersectional, interdisciplinary work that was happening that I got to kind of get my hands into. And she was a great mentor in letting me do kind of go where I wanted to go. So I thought for a while I was going to be a producer, because there was jobs in the office called producers. So basically, they produce the events or the the programming associated with the grants that the office gave out.
Got it. So you get there where, if I'm doing the math right, this is like late 2023.
Yeah, I started in October of 2023.
All right, great. And then how long are you at that position? Of course, once you're at MIT, right, it's easier to get the next job at MIT, I imagine.
Yeah, you'd think, but it was I really fell in love with a group that sat in the Office of the Arts called CAMIT, which is Council for the Arts at MIT. It was a group of donors who give a certain amount every year to fund student grants. And they also had this big award ceremony and gala called the McDermott Gala that I got to plan. I was the kind of the lead project manager on that. And I just fell in love with this group of arts philanthropists. And so that's kind of how I got into the art philanthropy scene in Boston, because I was connecting with all of these people. But it was more of an outsider charm, I call it. Like, I got to say, oh, I just get to know you. I don't have to ask you for money. But I realized I wanted to do something more frontline. I felt like I was, I can, I'm in good company. I can do a theater analogy here, but I felt like I was pulling the strings behind the scenes. I was making the set pieces move, but I wanted to perform. And by perform, I meant I wanted to be on the front line. I really wanted to be interacting with alumni, having the hard conversations, and like right on the front line. And so I applied for this job at Sloan, who I met a friend who knew about the job, and she connected me. And then I went through 8 interviews, in an extensive interview process. And I also had to do a screening where I had to do a mock donor call. And then meet with the executive director and the associate dean, senior associate dean. So it was quite an interview process, but then I got the job.
Right. I mean, it's the type of position you're in where they want to make sure you're really, really, really good and that you're not going to be screwing up, right?
Yep.
Because.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with sensitive conversations, and they need to trust that you're good at what you're doing. I mean, I have the privilege of kind of my first frontline job, I'm doing it really at the top level. So I'm pretty lucky in that.
Great. And yeah, so that's your current position you were hired into. All right, fantastic. And here you are.
Here I am.
All right, great. Let's say preface the next question. We've gone to the third part of the interview, three. We got to preface the next question with there is no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
So these days, let's define these days as summer, fall of 2025. What, if anything, has been your relationship with music slash dance slash theater?
Yeah. Great question. So I have worked as an assistant director for a musical production at a small speakeasy stage company, which is that's the name of it, Speakeasy Stage Company in Boston, that my professor in undergrad actually founded. And so he was directing a production and he needed an assistant director. And so I did that. So that really got me back in the room and behind the table in a artistically fulfilling way. And
Fantastic. Go on.
I was just say I also still come back to Berklee Boco and watch all of the main stage theater shows, and I stay engaged with the director of development over there as well.
That's terrific. That one that you assistant directed, that was in the past summer or fall, or is that earlier?
Oh God, it was spring, so March.
March. Okay, pretty close. Ed, can I ask, that'd be too pushy. Was it a volunteer or paid position?
It was paid, but it was like low hundreds. Like they it mostly volunteer.
I understand totally. All right, perfect. So, next question I have for you is, I see people come into academic fundraising from a large variety of backgrounds. And most of them were not musical theater majors or performing arts grads. Even so, let's assume you might have otherwise gotten a college degree somewhere, maybe University of Maine. Is there anything you feel your BOKO experience did particularly well to prepare you for the current career role you have today?
Yeah, I always said when I first came out of undergrad, I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do with this degree? I have this degree in musical theater. What am I going to do with it? And one, I'll say every job I applied for required a bachelor's degree. And so at its core, and the most basic answer to the question is I had a bachelor's degree,
Right.
which was a minimum requirement for most of these jobs. But it also allowed me to and prepared me to really take curveballs and improv, but also be good on my feet, quick on my feet. I was always told we love to hire theater people because they know how to do everything. And it's because we're so used to, making do with what we have. You give a theater person a cardboard box, a roll of duct tape, and a ruler, and they'll put on a whole play. And so I think it just taught me how to be resourceful, and there is a component of communication and public speaking to this role that I would be nowhere without my musical theater training.
Right, terrific. Oh, let's flip this question around now, because right, you went to Boca State Musical Theater, you got your BFA, and you're doing very well for yourself in your career. All that said, when you look back at your musical theater experience at BOKO, is there anything where you say, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was a student, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete in your education?
Bouncing around from job to job, I wished because I did that at first. I don't do that anymore, so it's easier, but I do some freelance work here and there. So I really wish that I learned how to do my taxes. I think that doing taxes is a lot harder when you have several sources of income. And as a like I said, I did that assistant directing gig. I've done all kinds of other little gigs here and there, but it makes it a lot harder to do that. So that like taxes and budgeting would have been a really great thing to learn, in the lens of an artist or a more freelance person.
Sure, certainly a lot of artists are doing many different things. So, all right.
I'm trying to think. Like I also feel like I wish there had been more of an emphasis on it's not always about your ability to do the thing. It can be more about your ability to learn to do the thing. At the end of the day, the most important part is being able to build a relationship with the people around you. And I think an emphasis on, that relationship building, the connection piece, it could have been more crucial. I feel like I learned that at BOKO, but kind of in a more indirect way.
Got it. Got it. Perfect. So, again, you graduated with an idea of direction about your career, right? You were like, okay, a sort of theater slash arts adjacent, but you knew, as we said, you wanted a 9 to 5 with a 401k. And, it took you a little bit of time, but really not all that much time to end up in a job at MIT, which then led you to the position you're in now. So, would you believe if I've told you I've heard of many, much more windy paths than the one you took?
Yes, I do believe you when you say that. I feel like I have a pretty good sense of where I'm going and where I wanted to go from the beginning. This job that I took as assistant director of the annual fund at MIT Sloan, I was actually offered a job as a producer in the Office of the Arts at MIT. So when I got this offer for this role, my current boss says, okay, well, we want to keep you. So we're going to counter offer you with this job. So I had to really decide, do I want to be a producer in the Office of the Arts and stay with the arts, or do I want to go be a frontline fundraiser? And I ultimately made the decision to do the frontline fundraising work because it's what makes me want to get up and run through the wall in the morning.
Good for you. I can I ask, was there a significant pay difference or not really?
Well, I had more experience in producing, so I would have made probably $5,000 more in that role, but there's a lot more room for growth in salary range in this role. Like that one would have kind of capped out where it was at, where this one I can kind of work my way through the salary grades.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so my question for you is, like, not everyone has found the path. Some people may still be doing those additions, just getting a little tiresome.
Yeah.
Other people, let's say, still, while BOKO students might be not quite sure as to what their path should be after they graduate. You did at some point have that feeling like you didn't want to move to New York, wait tables, and do a ton of auditions.
Yep.
So let's say for either or both of those groups, right, people recently out of BOKO or the current group of students there, what advice do you have?
Yeah. The best advice I can give to anyone who is thinking about getting a job or even making a career change, no matter what, from what to what, is find a mentor. I mean, I would be nowhere without my mentors. And what I would do, I went on, I called it my information tour. I would have a meeting with someone and have a coffee. And then I would, at the end of the call, I'd say, who is one person that you think I should connect with after this call? And so it was like this chain of people. I'd meet one person who'd pass me to another person, who'd then make an introduction to another person, and then another person. And then eventually I met the person who ultimately gave me this job. Because I was just doing my information tour because I really wanted to go into frontline fundraising. And so I talked to people who are doing it every day. And people are willing to have a conversation with you if you show genuine interest. So that would be the first thing I'd say. And then also having a clean and clear resume that tells the story of your experience and skills unabashedly is really crucial. It has to be able to show who you are, but also show what you can do.
That's great. And let's zoom in a little bit because I think, I feel like you're my interview number 271 or two, somewhere around there. A lot. No one's listening to all of them. But I feel like you're my second or maybe third person in academic fundraising.
Okay.
So I suspect that anyone who's made it this far is thinking about it as a career. Maybe they're thinking professional fundraiser, nonprofit fundraiser in general. Maybe they're thinking academic fundraiser. But they're probably thinking fundraising of some type. So for someone who's not yet doing it, but is seriously thinking about it as a career, what advice do you have for them?
I would say like I've always said I'm gonna someday come back to the arts and I'm gonna be a fundraiser for a nonprofit arts program. And so it's like just because you're letting go of it now to get the experience doesn't mean that you're letting go of it forever. I think that you can, if it's meant to be, you'll find the way and you'll always come back to it. I truly believe that. I'm working at MIT Sloan now, which is a really big shop in a business school. But then I'm going to eventually, I feel deep down that I'm going to take these skills and I'm going to bring them back to a nonprofit music organization. So maybe even Berkeley someday. But I really do feel like, it's okay to take risks because you can always, music will always find its way back to you. I really believe that.
All right. Well, that's actually one last thing I have for you then, which is you have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I am halfway through my MBA myself.
Ooh.
I'm getting my master's in business administration through Southern New Hampshire University, which
That's an online school, right?
it's online, it's asynchronous. But I I find it really applicable to the work that I do. I use it every day. And I also, it's something that MIT contributes towards. So they pay up to a certain amount every year towards my degree, my professional development. So
Nice.
I had a professor tell me once, never go, don't go to grad school if someone else isn't paying for it. And I don't know if that's completely true, but I am very glad that I am able to continue my education, and I'm continuing my for an MBA, and all I have is a BFA in musical theater otherwise. So you can still, it's never too late to expand your educational horizon.
All right, that's terrific. That's really inspiring to hear. Well, all right, Isaac, thank you so much for taking the time. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, you too, Kevin. Thanks so much for reaching out.
All right, best of luck to you.
Thanks.